as long as you publicize it properly. And you do that by before any event or artificial event or fake event actually is told is, or appears to have happened, you build up an animosity towards those people by saying they've got animosity towards you. They really hate you, you see. And then it means they hate us. And you keep building that up over and over and over and until the event happens, the standard event is supposed to have happened. And then next thing you know, they're off to war, as it was planned, of course, long beforehand. And that's a standard, simple technique of doing it. It's quite fantastic to see it happening over and over again with this pretty well the same scenarios, really, you know. And this time, of course, they must get Iran. I mean, I personally think Trump was put in to hurry up and get the list over and done with, at least the Iran part of it, because Hillary, basically, when she was in the State Department before that under Obama, and a group of them there with Madeleine Albright and so on, they'd been using proxy armies with different fake names, supposedly to do with ISIS and ISIL and ICE and yada, yada, yada. But they were mercenary armies that were getting funded and equipped from the West. And I know this because I read all the articles on the air for years when it was all happening by all the usual official outlets. And so it was documented that we were arming them and again, financing them and supplying all their equipment and foods and so on to get rid of Syria. Mainly at that time, they'd already got rid of Libya, and that started the mass migration because Libya was literally a bulwark against the mass migration from the West. And for you know, it was well understood, but with all sides at the time, that Gaddafi had mentioned the United Nations too, that if they take down his country, he says you get a massive flood into Europe, and that's what's happened. The reason it happened is because it was planned to happen. Because nothing really occurs in this system, this big, big, incredible system of planning, multi-layered strategies and so on, all working together. It doesn't happen by accident. And it was planned that way to change Europe, the face of Europe and the world eventually, because you got to remember the very old agenda to do with elimination of nations, for as an example. And nations, you prepare them for the withering away, as they call it, withering away of the nation state. That was a communist idea at the time. But it was the same idea that was run by maybe their mentors, for instance, living in London, who ran the Royal Institute for International Affairs, who wanted a world government too, and the CFR, another branch of the same organization. Under many, many names and different guises, that they've catered for all sects of society and ethnic groups and religious groups and everything else. So it's well understood that this is how the world is run. And through all the free trade agreements that the same group literally drafted up for governments to sign, and this is legitimate, it's not some conspiracy theory. The CFR, Royal Institute for International Affairs, with the group for the Pacific Rim regions, the Asian Pacific and so on, this is all the same organization. They drafted up the agreements for the United Europe to happen under free trade, an economic bloc. And the same thing was to happen with the NAFTA deal, which they've changed in the last year or so with Donald Trump, because too many folk were using the name NAFTA and folk were beginning to understand what it meant. It's so typical, if you start to understand what's happening, they change the names of it to try to confuse you. There's a conspiracy. That's the conspiracy part of it. We didn't do it for that reason. It just sounds better now, you know. But it's the same agreement that they've changed it into for the Americas. And it gets updated every year, and that's why you hear about the strife with the old agreement with Canada, Mexico, and the States, as they readjust who gets what, to sell what, at what price, to who, what country, and so on. Free trade is not free trade, you understand. I mentioned it so many times before that free trade is monopolistic trade. It's for a consortium run under of countries, a block of countries, run under a single agency. And that was the communist idea as well, by the way, and it's not a coincidence. But that they would decide on different sects of society, farmers, even beekeepers, who would sell to which countries and how much, and how much the countries would have to import from each other in the same areas. So it literally put so many farmers out of business in Britain, and they all fell for the hype, all just expanding it, ready for massive selling of your butter and your cheese and your milk produce, and folk were told to take on mortgages. Same thing happened in Canada, by the way, for a similar reason, years ago. And then, of course, the free trade deal is put through, and then you find out, no, they cut your quotas and so on. You could import more from abroad or different countries, and that's how it's really done. And I say that movie, it was put out quite a few years back now with Anthony Hopkins in it, called Heartland. It's a kind of portrayal of what happened to farmers at that particular time in Britain, how their government sold them out. And it wasn't accidentally selling them. It's like they didn't understand. No, they were sold completely out by liars. because we're run by secrecy and deception. That's how you rule people. You don't tell them the truth. You don't say to them, oh, by the way, all you farmers there, we're going to start making you put you out of business because we're going to start importing stuff from France instead, and dairy line, etc., and so on. And that's how it's all done. It's all a rigged system. And for the corporations that manufacture anything at all, it's a monopolistic system, completely monopolistic, where certain big biggies are giving grants to trade across the block, and other ones are banned from that. You can't do it, you see. It's completely a con job. But it goes on and on and on, and we watch it going on and on and on, and then they come up with their fake little spats about, Trump wasn't happy with the deal, or Canada was getting too much of this or that, and so was Mexico, etc. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to meet every year and slang this stuff out, you see, under their agreements. So there's nothing unusual about it. It's the way it's set up. But we're living in a system, as I say, that you watch the same things over and over again. There are many ways of the war starting, the big war, the one to finish off the list. And I've got a few countries to go, and you've got the Yemeni group on it too, and you've got Iran on it, and they must get them out of the way. But that was all published in the 1990s by the group in the States at the time that Bush and a whole bunch of them were involved with, and he became president, and he became his backers, and off they went to war. And it really has changed the face of Europe and the Americas forever, really. North America, at least, anyway, forever, because of the mass migration, the fallout, the incredible debt it has caused. And at the same time, all this was happening. You had, again, through free trade deals, the elimination of your manufacturing base inside Canada and the States. And they signed it over, just like the free trade deal in Europe. They signed over to Mexico, you see, for the manufacturing, for temporarily. And they called it the Mexican Corridor, where they set up all the factories. They moved them down there and set them up there. And then after that, once it got completely done with China and agreed to move all the manufacturing to China, off it went there, and that was it. The governments that you think you elected were behind us. They all signed on to it to deindustrialize us all. I hope folk get that through their heads. These smiling liars that you elect, they do what the party tells them. And that's what they'll tell you. Well, I didn't like it, but you had to go with the party. Which really is what's the point of having leaders for different constituents, different areas, going to Parliament or Congress or whatever. Because if they're supposed to speak for you, they should be voting in any deal in Parliament or the Congress for you, not the party. So it's a complete farce what we're living in. We're living in a managed system, where really the politicians know darn well not to ask questions that lead to more than just suspected conclusions. You don't ask questions if you want to get up the ladder, you see. And psychopaths are awfully good at that. They hone in quickly to what's expected, and because they're natural actors, they can play the game quite easily. So anyway, we're deindustrialized, and then we have an era right now of hyperinflation. It'll get to hyperinflation, as was planned to do, not just by chance, and not just because they screwed up with their accounting, as they always pretend it's what happened, or there's a slump, and no, it's because it's planned that way. Years ago, I remember talking about it, even when the last so-called crash was happening in 2007 and 2008. And they told her, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll borrow money to tide us over it all. And the government in Canada, too, said, oh, wait, it's not going to affect us. Our banks are solid. They're in great condition. And, of course, when you delved into it, which I did, I found out that all the biggies that I got the list to from the government had got bailouts from the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank, which is not really a federal one at all. It's private loan. But anyway, you don't have to pass gold or silver or even note paper to any country or any person or any government anymore. All you have to do is add a few zeros behind a number on a computer, and that's what you then owe them, really, plus interest. And that's how you get bailed out, you see. So they got special drawing rights for Canada and the States, the U.S. banks, but also other foreign banks too in other countries, because the U.S. Federal Reserve now is acting almost like a central bank for all the other central banks across the planet. And at the time, I mentioned it too, because I really followed it so meticulously. I knew darn well where it was going to go. What they always do when they crash your economy and you crash your financial system is that they devalue the currency. So you need more numbers of the currency to try and buy the same amount of stuff that half the amount of would have done before. And that's what we are now. We're paying about double what we did before, for, especially in Canada. It's very obvious, even in food. And the government even admitted that they'd given permission to the big food producers, and meaning the big packagers and so on, the right to the middlemen to jack up all the food prices big time. And they've done it. I mean, butter now, a little thing about butter here now, is creeping up towards the $6 mark. And a pound, $6 a pound. Right now it's five something plus tax, because it's a processed food. In other words, it's been, you know, pasteurized and God knows what else they do to it before you end up with the finished product. But they call it process, so you pay tax on top of the food now. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse. Well, this is not happening back, and it's not just because we have to pay back the money. That's part of it. Money is a tool of power, and the magicians that handle the bookkeeping for the central banking systems are the true powerful ones, really working again for masters. But they get incredible payoffs for, you know, doing their magic on the books, for instance. Because don't forget, you're in a world system, and money being a source of power and a tool of power is obviously ruled by the powerful, who can, they can make themselves very rich very quickly and double their income with a few strokes of in a computer, you might say. And that's how the system is today, and no one's going to look into it for about them, where they get the cash from. Just as they don't look into where politicians get the cash from. Some of the politicians today are multimillionaires, and they haven't done any work except being so-called elected as a public servant to something. Well, when you see what their income is supposed to be and what they end up having after a few years, a very few years, they're not getting it all from their paychecks. Now, it's true in the US, and I'm sure other countries now too. In the US, they made it legitimate, legal. The politicians inside the US can do insider trading. They get the hot tips of where government's going to sink its money, and you can't lose in that kind of hot tip. The government will sink vast sums of money into money pits, regardless of even if they're failing. That's how they work in government systems, and that happens all the time too. So money is a source of power, it's a tool of power, and it's used by the powerful for their own big agenda. And the agenda is not to continue, it's never to continue the way it is here in the world, is it? You had an industrial era for quite a long time. It could have gone on for a much, much longer time, except that those who owned the world by then wanted rid of it from the West and to base it in China and the Far East and in India now too. Not just for cheap labor, but it was just time to do it. And they wanted to bring down all the Western countries and to austerity. And I gave the talks from the United Nations talks on austerity, the coming austerity and so on, and the Council on Foreign Relations articles, etc., and all the big think tanks on how we have to bring the West into austerity. Austerity is a nice way of, they used to say in the middle of the 19th century, with the politeness they'd have, in conversation, the middle class would say, they're poor, austere child. I mean, what they normally they'd say a poverty-stricken child, but it sounds better, austere, austerity. You're not in poverty, you're in austerity, you see. And it sounds better. Poverty might make you have a bit of guilt twang that for allowing it to even happen, you see. So you always camouflage it with the words that are used, just like you didn't have slaves in Britain, you had servants, you know. And servants that were tied to the home that they looked after, or tied to the farms, that as tenant farmers. And at least they were a bit more honest in the Middle Ages. They call them serfs, you know, which really was a slave, basically. You're bought and sold with land. And if you ran away before the plague hit, of course, when you ran away, they would catch you and force you back after torturing you and punishing you, or branding you, or killing you. That was the law. It wasn't until after you had the first big plague deaths across Europe and England, when again it killed off so many of the serf class, that they had to start thinking about actually giving them some kind of recompense and money to get them to go and work for them and give them a few rights. But again, they even tried to get away from them again, get it back from them once things got going pretty well again. But that's what always happens, isn't it? But today, as I say, we're living through almost a form of, with the warfare is coming up, because it's going to happen. You know, that's on the list. The list is never forgotten. I don't think they've ever put a war down that they wanted to have that they didn't actually ever do. There's always strategy involved for having the wars in the first place. It isn't just balance of power. And if it's even to do with knocking out some kind of up-and-coming institution or country or whatever, we should leave it. Since we're paying for all, we should at least have the right to know who it's going to benefit, or whose behalf is it really on, or for. Nothing is ever honestly given to the general public. And I always remind myself once in a while of the war, the complete utter war on society, a society that doesn't even know it's happening to them. They think that everything's quite natural. They think that almost, and probably actually it is in some apparently in modern TV stations, where they've got live intercourse and some things. I said this would happen in the 1990s, mind you. And then they gave music television big time for the young, up-and-coming youngsters who were just whose hormones were just exploding, coming into birth and exploding at the time, to make sure that they would be hyper-sexualized, to destroy the old system, for at least, it was never perfect, believe you me, of marriage and all the rest of it. But I tell you, it gave a much better solidity to society. And for folk who eventually got past the teenage years, it would give them more of a solid background for survival in family units, as opposed to what they have today. As I say, I remind myself every so often by watching, occasionally, the scheme, the housing scheme, they call them in places like Britain, and they call it the scheme as made by the BBC, of the devastation around the big cities, in and around the big cities in Scotland, for instance. And literally, for me, I've got to always catch myself, because back in the 90s, I talked about what was to come, based on what I already knew and had studied and what I noticed was coming up. And I noticed a massive influx at the time, an onslaught. I know it happened in different parts of England and Ireland too, of heroin just coming in almost unrestricted. And that, when that happens, it took planning for that to happen. It took coordination between police departments and covert departments too, that always exist, that most folk don't even know exist. It took a lot of planning and permissions and acceptance to allow that to even happen. And of course, it also meant that the big boys who were bringing the stuff in were all planned as well, for who they were and so on. And that was all understood of how to get it into the country. But heroin exploded, and it was so cheap, and it hit at the right time, and it was promoted at the right time by the music industry. It was so hip and cool, just like I had done it with hip and cool marijuana, Mary Jane, back in the 60s and 70s, but way beyond that now. Because now, they were deindustrializing the countries even then, in Scotland and in England. That was the plan as well. They'd already been through massive deindustrialization in the 1970s and through the 80s. And so you have this bereft of jobs, traditional jobs, all gone. Just wiped out, vanished, exported. And the public were lied to about it, why it was happening. Oh, they're just closed down, or you're led to, they expected you just to believe they went bankrupt or something. See, you would fill in the spots. They wouldn't tell you what happened. They were deliberately being put across the world by your tax money, just as it happened again with China later on everywhere else, and including Canada and the States. But to fill this void too of hyper-sexualized youngsters, where marriage was going to be obsolete, it was planned to be obsolete, and men were degraded to the point that all entertainment pretty well poo-pooed men altogether, made a laughingstock out of them. They had done that for years, mind you, from the American stations initially, and then on to the British stations that copied all with their dramas, etc., and their comedies. Comedy's a big one that they do all these things through. And eventually you've got a society where there's either no men, or the men just sit quiet in the background and say nothing, as the rest of it goes kaput. And the families are finished, and their children are on drugs. And this is a complete war, culturally, psychologically, all planned that way. And with the use of Big Pharma, of course, because they could get handfuls and handfuls of Valium on the streets, and all, any other kind of drugs for that matter. And then government steps in to take up all the slack, and all the children who are completely hooked on drugs, of all kinds. Until it's normal to have social workers assigned to every family pretty well. And then the people who were growing up at that time, the 90s, are now maybe a parent, if they've lived that long and survived, maybe a parent themselves. And so with every generation it gets worse, because there's no family values, traditions, or even the families themselves to help them out. They've been wrecked, absolutely wrecked. And in that housing, that one called the Scheme, and the Scottish one, you'll see people who, and they do have subtitles for those who can't make it out what I mean, you'll see people struggling to understand. They don't know what happened. They really don't know what happened, because their everyday life is normal. To you looking at it, you'll see this is completely dysfunctional, with no hope. And you'll see them reacting, trying to build little community centers to get a community spirit going, things like that. And other things that are beyond band-aid techniques, because the community centers were fine years and years ago for what they had then. Society's been wrecked even further since then. You won't get people sitting playing dominoes in this day and age, unless they're an old folks home, perhaps. You have to understand you're in a planned society, and manage society, wreck the society, bring in and increase social work departments and the pseudo-psychological experts, pseudo-science experts, I'd say, of the mind to take care of the slack. And they're as bad as the victims of all who are wrecked, and their lives are wrecked. Parents looking at the children, the parents' lives are often wrecked, and looking at the children whose lives are wrecked too. Everybody's just dysfunctional. And I'll tell you what it put me in mind of when I looked at it again. And I really mean this, because it's startling, and it's obviously what's happened. And it took me back too to the 90s, when I mentioned about what happens when society has been conquered, wrecked, and destroyed. And back then, the analogy I made was, if you look at the Indian society in Canada, you've got society, lots of studies done on it, where they themselves have tremendous alcohol and drug abuse. All the same problems, I'd say, that they have now everywhere else in Scotland and elsewhere, and in Canada too, for every society. But the Indians, literally, for them, are people who had lived with the same kind of culture. No matter what you think of the culture or even the tribal warfare that goes on, the fact is they had purpose in life, personal purpose. And you would follow the tradition of the elders. And it didn't have to be complex either, by the way. And they had purpose, and they were mainly hunters, and that gave them purpose too. They're busy for survival. But one, and as Darwin said it too, and they understand this technique too by studying eugenics and evolution and all the rest of it, as they call it, evolution. The fact is, if you wreck a society and bring them to the status of what they used to call arrested civilizations, ones who didn't go beyond a certain step. Stage. Didn't mean that there's anything wrong with them. They were just stuck. Often they were completely self-sufficient. But you can't make a profit of people who are self-sufficient, can you? So we call them arrested civilizations. But when you take away their purpose and their cultural purpose and their connections to their ancestries, then they just turn inwards on themselves and self-annihilate, basically. And that's what you're seeing in parts of Scotland and England and Europe and Canada too, by the way. Coincidentally, at the same time, it's just somehow the nations say that you can take all these different drugs, and they're going to make them, even all of them actually, legal eventually. You understand you're in a complete, you're beyond the takedown stage. Now it's time to eradicate us. That's what's happening now. We're getting eradicated, completely eradicated. Look at the cancer rates are through the roof, for goodness sake. And the foods we're eating, we're not even allowed to know if they're even genetically modified. Or what kind of pesticides have used on them? We don't have the right to know that. And we accept that. That means we're gone. When we don't say, hey, we demand. Huh? When you put yourself into the state of being dictated to by authorities, you're pretty well given up. You forget that these people who call themselves servants are supposed to serve you. But of course, in socialism, and that's why the elites and the wealth of this world picked socialism. Socialism was planned by high levels of the middle classes, who literally looked around them at all the poor and despised them and were afraid of them and thought they'd come out and start planning societies for them. Yeah, there'd be some do-gooders amongst them, but there was a lot of them. H.G. Wells is one of them. Who had fear and contempt for the working classes. The fear part was that when he saw them passing their windows, going to these smelly, rotten factories, dirty factories every day, he, like many, I suppose, had a fear of maybe something terrible could happen and he'd have to join them. So you end up loathing that which you fear, you see. And that's where we're going today with all. But watching the annihilation happening with folk who have no hope at all, where the availability of all kinds of drugs, so cheap too, are beyond just simple proliferation, is planned proliferation and planned takedown, folks. Or believe you me, authorities, they can galvanize you into world wars when it suits them and take over everything, including the rationing of food, which they'll do again, by the way, eventually, under a similar kind of guise, not just a world war, but a different thing to get again. You've got to go into austerity, remember. But the fact is, they can galvanize and take over everything in society and every facet of society and production and the means of production and basic survival very quickly. And you think they couldn't stop the drugs? Do you really believe that? in a system where they know everything about everybody, every single one of you, they know more about you than you know about yourself by the studies they've done on you. And they constantly do on you. But they just don't know who's... Come on, folks, eh? You're in the takedown phase. And that's why, just like Brave New World, written in the 1930s, the early 30s, not by a guy with a crystal ball, but Aldous Huxley, who mixed his family, but belonged to this managerial elite class, who looked at all the common popular people, they call it populism, and the popular people, the people who like popular music and popular, which was beneath them, of course. But they were quite open about it, that there'd be too many people. Until his death, Aldous Huxley, along with his brother, and actually Julian, who was worse, talked about the fear of overpopulation, of all the wrong kind of people. And people thought at the time, well, it wouldn't affect us, and say in Britain, you know, you're thinking this guy's got something in common with you. No, they didn't. You're as much of a peasant as the people across the world in some supposedly third world country. That's it there. So anyway, they talked about it in Brave New World in the 1930s, and how they'd bring in a system where the state would raise the children. Never mind the fact that they would literally genetically engineer the people, the right kind of people with the right genes, the gene replacements and all the rest of it, and to get the right categories of work distribution for different jobs, from the intellectual to the menial. And they would breed them all, different classes of them. And they would get lots of sex, hyper-sexualized, lots, every night. In fact, it's almost mandatory you had to have sex. But you would have a sterile relationship, there'd be no offspring. They even make it taboo to have sex with the same person twice in a week. So promiscuity had to be shared, you see. A lot of these ideas came from Plato and the Republic, where literally women would be held in common. Well, women may object to that, so you don't tell them that they're all there to be shared around with everybody. You just tell them that they're free, you know, and give them a paycheck and give them a culture that basically gives you exactly what you wanted to until they're all in common. You know? These things are not by chance. They don't happen by chance. And then you have, again, Brave New World, you have the primitive type who is born naturally outside. There's a few settlements of them outside the big protected cities, apart from the genetically modified ones, who are still wild. They're the wild ones. But because they're wild, they can still think. And they can point out the things that are wrong. And what's absent from it all is a sense of a great love. And it's not just happy, but love for things and great spiritual feelings and so on. Those that are generally modified were laughed at. They thought this primitive guy who was brought in as a novelty and an experiment, they thought he was quaint and all that, with strange ideas about having real mothers and real fathers, since they were all born in, basically, as we call it, test tube types. They thought it was quaint that he'd have these strange notions. And he quotes Shakespeare and so on, and gives them stories about high emotion that they couldn't quite grasp it, because they're completely materialistic. They live for the moment. That was their life. And then, just like John Dewey and others prescribed long before, and again, that's where a lot of the ideas came from Huxley's book. But John Dewey, in his school of thought, they helped create the educational system for America and a good part of Europe, same groups. They would train the children that death was normal, and you'd be allocated a certain amount of years, and then you would die. And nobody would bemoan you dying. There'd be a celebration of you dying, and you would die humanely, you see. And now you're in an age now, today, where when you hit a certain age, they want to euthanize you openly, very openly, and they're promoting, this is an agenda you're going through. This isn't the brainchild of professors who are living now, dreamed up themselves. They're following a script. And certain ones are selected to reaffirm the script to the public, to get you used to the idea through repetition of it. And to, well, I guess I had to hurt them eventually. And there you go. Just like the people in the scheme that this series in the BBC was talking about, poor souls. They're trying to, just like they tried with the Indian reserves in Canada and elsewhere, whether they're falling to drugs and alcohol and the rest of it, they're trying the similar things in Scotland, the people themselves. And it wasn't lack of money. It was strictly responsible. There, so many of them are on welfare and have their houses paid, their rents and so on, and their food, and they have computers and TVs and all the rest of it, and they can afford to go out and so on. So it's even unemployed. It wasn't just a lack of money. It was purpose and function. The function of man, woman, family, and society has been destroyed. And when that happens, and the family is destroyed, then the community is destroyed, because each family, all the different families collectively are the community. And communities used to stand up, and I remember them standing up to bills that were passed by local governments, and they would, oh no, you're not. And they wouldn't. They would listen. When you don't have that community anymore, with good mindsets and logic, and whose minds can think straight enough, when you don't have them to stand up collectively, then those who are in control have won, you see. Before they start the next round of whatever, they've already won. That's what, again, back to socialism, that's what H.G. Wells said. He says, we will eventually annihilate the family until the individual will be talked down to by us, the government, straight up from government to individual, and there'll be nobody around you, no kin to stand up for you, or community to stand up for you. That's what he said, and that's what they wanted, and Bernard Shaw wanted it too, for those who don't quite know. Socialism is an ordered, planned society that makes the elite feel safer. And to be planned, everybody must be utterly predictable in it. That's why you're so absurd. It's got nothing to do with terrorism. Never did have anything to do with terrorism. Now, the time is flying again, and I've been prattling on. I didn't even mean to go off here. I want to talk just briefly about a few things that have been happening in what we call the media these days. But I'll just touch on this. Just touch on it. It's a clue to how big things really are, you know. A sign and a symptom of a destroyed society, when these things can go that far without being stopped, right? I mean, you've heard of the Jeffrey Epstein thing, but also you have this present news to do with Ed Buck in the States, prominent Democratic donor Ed Buck, arrested for running a drug den and being a violent sexual predator who preys on men struggling with addiction after a third man overdosed in his California apartment. This guy was in the weirdest sadistic system, folks. Really, you know, when you see what he was into, with folk who were dying on their last legs, of AIDS and so on. Mm-mm-mm. But, you know, he'd been doing that for years. And being a wealthy guy who, no doubt, he was a party animal, and they go around all the big, this guy gave millions out to different politicians and parties. So that you can't keep that kind of thing secret that he's into, any more than Jeffrey Epstein's kept secret just by pure chance. So I put two articles up on that too. What I'm saying, you're looking at the end of and the destruction. This is something in a more modern sense than the techniques are used, like drugs to kill them or same strange combinations of drugs. It's like looking at something you'd read from Caligula in ancient Rome. And that stuff is not that rare now. In this day and age. And then Jeffrey Epstein ran a $500 million Ponzi scheme, fueled by insider trading and fake stock buys, and then fleece clients by selling off $275 million worth of bogus notes when the money ran out. This claim is in one of the newspapers. Well, this is a big operation. It wasn't just Jeffrey Epstein, folks. It was a massive operation. You couldn't keep this quiet from CIA. Unless the CIA were in it, you know. And other organizations too, no doubt about it. No doubt. Judging from the connections. But he also, literally, ran a pyramid scheme of sexual purchases, you might say, as well. And had these young girls going across the planet, important people. Massive organization. This wasn't a one-man job here. Massive organization. And the money, of course, that was backing him from how he was set up tells you that those who set him up were already part of a big intelligence operation. There's no doubt there. No doubt whatsoever. None at all. And then you get Bill Gates says he wishes he hadn't met with Jeffrey Epstein in 2013. Small world, eh? Isn't it? Small world. And insists he didn't know the pedophile that well. After it was revealed that this billionaire donated $2 million to MIT's Media Lab at the Sex Pests' request. The Media Lab is an awfully interesting organization. I really mean that. There's way more to it than meets the eye. Remember that technology rules the world, and whoever has the most of it and the cutting edge of it is going to be the leader and the owner of ruling the world. Putin said that. Others have said it too. And the Media Lab was based in MIT. And they really scoured and scoured. They'd get the first dibs on things that were getting worked on and so on. And it's so interesting of the different characters at the Media Lab. And then you have one of the other Media Lab characters, or MIT characters, coming out. Stallman, his name is, pioneer of the free software movement, argued about the definition of sexual assault on an MIT email about the university's connections to Jeffrey Epstein. And basically, Stallman argued that the late Marvin Minsky, an artificial intelligence pioneer, accused of assaulting one of Epstein's victims, Virginia Jeffrey, had not actually assaulted anyone. And he said basically that these underage victims were entirely willing. That takes me back to something awfully interesting, which I won't go into, but Mr. Epstein's sidekick, Maxwell, referred to these young women as trash. Which is an interesting thing to me, anyway, because I know there's different meanings of it. And then you go into this one article here. Stanford R. Olshinsky. He died in 2012, but he was born in 1922, long life. An American inventor and scientist who collected pretty well patents on technology. But he, it says he was granted well over 400 patents. Don't forget the patent industry is a very shady area. And if you get first dibs on someone working on something, you can grab it, you can get in there first, you can get the patent on it too. It's like industrial espionage when you look at all these different things to do with patents. You always see lawsuits galore over different patents getting pinched, as they say, knocked off or stolen very quickly. There's no surface evidence that Olshinsky himself was actually involved in anything really shady, but all corporations that hire people in any field, especially in science, often acquire patents that are for things that are discovered, invented by employees. That's very, very common. And they all sign on to that deal when you get them the employment. That's just the way it goes. But this guy Olshinsky was awfully interesting and the different things he was involved in. And he backed another fella. He almost raised them in a sense. Joey, his name was Ito. And he's a Japanese activist, it says, entrepreneur and venture capitalist. The former director of the MIT Media Lab and former professor of the practice of media arts and science at MIT. He's a visiting professor of practice at Harvard Law School. And he's got all these different awards granted to him. He was raised not to fail, this guy. So it's a very interesting story, and how his family moved to Canada. Born in Japan, Kyoto, and then first to Canada, then to the US, and then to a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, where his father became a research scientist, his mother a secretary of Energy Conversion Devices Inc., now Ovonix, the founder of his mother's company, Stanford R. Olshinsky, was impressed with young Ito, whom he thought of almost as his son, and he mentored the boy's interest in technology and social movements. It's interesting, both and social movements. And when he was 13, gave him work with scientists, saying he's not a child in the conventional sense. It's interesting, too, small world, because I think that the godfather of this child ended up being Timothy Leary. But anyway, this young guy, who often dropped out of university and all the rest of it, was suddenly launched into this, again, this young genius guy, you see, just launched into it and ends up running the Media Lab at MIT, eh? Well, anyway, he quit it eventually when all the scandal broke out with Epstein and so on, because he was taking money from Epstein too, who was financing Mr. Ito privately as well as for the Media Lab. It's a small world, and when you get these connections all together, you have to see what are they all after here, because such people don't do things for nothing or just out of basic interest. It is premeditated. You set up your draft board, you know, and you get information coming out from here, here, and here, and you'll end up with the power. Information is power, especially in areas of technologies. It really is. But what a small world, eh? And it says that Ito returned to the US and so on after being at certain schooling, but she dropped out of, as I say, to attend Tufts University as a computer science, after he dropped out of other ones, where he met, amongst others, Pierre Omidyar, later founder of eBay, you know. Then he enrolled at Chicago University and dropped out too, etc., etc. But It says, from Keio University, he earned a PhD in media and governance in 2018. And under his dissertation was called The Practice of Change. You understand what I'm saying here? You've got a person who's massively involved in patents, almost raising someone as a protege, who just the door's open for him. And he's put into a position of a central hub of information at MIT. He'll get the first whisperings of anything that's getting worked on and so on. And that's a clue right off the bat, too. Even for investors, because if you know, and that's how it works too, if you know where grants are getting, big massive grants and governments adding to the grants in different areas, you know where to invest your money, etc. But you also know that such patents that might come out of this will be awfully, awfully lucrative if you can grab them first. Just a thought, you know. But have a smaller world. And Timothy Leary was a godfather. I tell you. Mm-mm-mm. And Ito's sister, Mizuko Ito, is a cultural anthropologist studying media technology use. And also the musician Cornelius is his second cousin, and so on. So anyway, that's a little cluster. You could spend a good part of your year just on that little cluster alone with Jeffrey Epstein, on this part of his life. And the people in this particular media lab, and who funded it, and all the other places the funding was coming from, and what connections they had to outside corporations, companies, and everything else, too. It's awfully, awfully interesting, to me, in a way. I can't say any more about it, but I'm sure I could, if I really, really wanted to. But there's certain things you can't go too far in without a concrete evidence, except not in this day and age, when you're talking about powerful people. Now, also, too, as we all know, the Sackler family were dishing out a few million. Believe you me, the fines would be nothing to this multi-billion-dollar family from their drugs. They knew what it was going to do to the people. They knew, and they knew what it was before they dished it all out to be used, what the drugs would cause. Highly addictive, and they knew it was going to be highly addictive, and they had it so well marketed too, etc. too. I'm sure you've all read it in the newspapers about their family. It's just astonishing that such people exists, isn't it? Who have no conscience at all. They knew what they were doing. Aggressive marketing of highly addictive opioids. And the thing is, they knew that was part of its appeal to them as entrepreneurs too, and owners, is that it would be highly addictive very quickly too, very quickly. As I say, now we're in a system now of massive takedown of societies. It took years. I mean, everybody knew what it was doing for years and years and years and years. Where was all your governments? Why weren't they? Why wasn't there any department stepping in to do the investigations which now they're releasing? Why wasn't it done years and years ago? Powerful people have powerful ways of being left alone, right? Other articles that show you. See, we're in the destructive phase of society. Look around you. It's like a battlefield. And yet pro-choice and anti-abortion advocates express shock at the discovery of fetal remains at Dr. Ulrich George Klopfer's home. Hmm? South Bend, I think it's Indiana. Apparently he died, and then his family went into his home and so on, and found more than 2,200 fetal remains that he kept preserved at his home. What was he doing with them? No answers, you see. You get no answers. He was an abortionist. Yeah? But what was he doing at his home? This wasn't his clinic, you know. You're looking, that doesn't raise a hair in most folks' heads anymore. I mean, we're so beyond being shocked because the war has worked. Look around you. If it doesn't work on you, this kind of thing, then you're a victim of it too. It's worked on you well, you see. Your entertainment probably shows you more gruesome stuff than this. And that's part of the reason you do accept all this stuff, by the way. Abortionist Ulrich Klopfer kept thousands of dead babies but inspires little curiosity, this other article says. Yeah, no one cares, eh? This is an age where, again, they bring out their leaders at the right time as they're telling you to eat insects and so on to save the planet. It's almost like, you understand, when a person is captured, a prisoner, for instance, and jailers traditionally were basically psychopathic, cruel people who enjoyed what they did, more so at one time, eh? And you'll see it happening, too, like the videos that came out about the U.S. torturing people in Iraq, for instance, and in prison systems. They do horrific things, and they become kind of immune to it. But there's something about taunting and humiliating people who are defenseless. But that, even waterboarding, which was the first thing that the troops were taught to do when they were catching, that was it was a death penalty by the U.S. on Japanese who had done that to prisoners of war. It was a death penalty if that was found. They had tribunals there in World War II. And yet when the Bush system took the Gulf War I, and then Desert Storm, then Gulf War I, and so on, and then into the Sun's term as well, waterboarding was priority. All the values that used to horrify you are out there, and it's okay. Well, you see, you gobble this up for entertainment, you have your whole life long. And that's why it works so well. I'll actually just put this up if there's time actually tonight, but this might just make it actually. Think about it. You've got to get this out of your head where your government is. It's so sad to me to watch people still going and voting for the same scumbags in all parties, because they're all part of the same con job, you see. If you have a one-party system like they did in the Soviet system, everybody knew it was a con. But you couldn't complain because socialism is ruthless. And you're seeing the same techniques getting applied across the Western world. Utter ruthless authoritarianism. That is what socialism brings, and that's why the multi-billionaires in the world decide that's what we're going to give you. There's less arguments with socialism. You do what you're told or else. In the Soviet system, as I say, the one-party system, they all knew what it was like and what it was about. And they joked, had stacks of jokes about it. But even then, you'd be awfully careful if you get in trouble or imprisoned. So in the West, of course, they give them at least a two-party system to make them appear that you actually have choices, that your vote matters. Even the same agendas continue regardless of what party you appear to be put into power. But your government, so you better go back. I'll just touch on them before I get off here. I've done so many articles over many, many years on what governments have done to the people. Never mind giving syphilis to people in parts of the U.S., black people in the U.S. at one point. Telling them they were giving them treatment for it. They gave them free blood tests. Oh, you got, no, they didn't have syphilis. They gave them a syphilis, and they noted down who they were giving it to and followed them to go untreated to see how it would affect them and take them down. That was your government system and CIA involvement too. They designed all this stuff. The strange CIA. You even wonder if they're even American. What are they? What are these characters? So anyway, that's one thing they did. They also sprayed the radioactive material over places too, over whole towns. Poor towns, of course. And so did Britain. Anyway, I'll just touch on a few of them, without going into any depth tonight. Forest spraying concerns mixed reviews on mill support, it says. This is Sudbury. Spraying of the forest with chemicals is unacceptable. Attention, fellow fishermen, hunters, nature lovers, just the folk that live there too. It's time to speak to protect Northern Ontario's public forests. Multinational corporations, Ecom and RYAM, R-Y-A-M, are proposing another decade of spraying non-essential toxic chemical herbicides in the Timmins, Sudbury and Campus Casing regions because it's cheaper than alternatives required for the past two decades in Quebec. And it says the Ontario government, without your comments, will cave into demands of these huge multinational corporations. It doesn't take much to make governments cave into big money because they all know each other, folks. Often the big companies put them in power. So anyway, it says that the comments are special needs from the First Nation members and the band councils with constitutionally protected rights to fish, hunting, and so on, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it's a huge area, and the government has the next 10-year forestry plan and so on. I don't know what happened. It's already happened in July, but I don't know what came out of it, if it's been stalled or what. And also, TEK elders will take government to court. And it says Raymond Owl, one of the founding members of Traditional Ecological Knowledge Elders, it stands for Traditional Ecological Knowledge Elders, of the North Shore of Lake Huron, says we'll be going to court to force the government to live up to the promise made in the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850. Good luck. First Nations were guaranteed the right to hunt, fish, gather berries, and use plant medicines in traditional territories. The Constitution Act of 1982 reaffirms those rights. So the rights are being violated by the practice of aerial spraying that they believe is damaging the plants, water, fish and animals. They're also concerned about the harm to humans. It's a good article. It's quite longish, but it gives you an idea about the incredible spraying they've had in the area. And the fact, as I've said before, it's now in the general newspapers about the spraying of glyphosate. in the over the forests here. Not never mind the chemtrails way above us as well, under the fake geoengineering to save the world con. But that's happening too. Do you understand? This will bring down a much quicker death rate, which again ties into the takedown of society after this long war. And so many folk today are so mind-bombed with the drugs that they're on. Never mind the strange floating through society that's falling apart, you know, that we're all doing. But the drugs that they're on and their children are on and so on. It makes it much easier to take you down physically now, isn't it? Because it's depopulation time. I hope you understand that. It's when they take away treatment from hospitals and they say it's much cheaper and more efficient to just give you a euthanasia pill. And after all, your standing in society isn't that great. We don't really need you. Why don't you just die? That's happening, folks, daily here. And you accept and you accept and you say, just like it used to be prohibitive to torture prisoners, or you gave them the death penalty for waterboarding at the end of World War II to your enemies, and then you end up being the main proponent for it. That's what's happened here. Degradation of culture makes much, much easier. And we've all been degraded in a hyper-sexualized entertainment system with all the instant messaging that's going on and new terms to grab and just follow. Well, I guess, well, maybe that's okay, you know. Until what was normal was facing 180 degrees to what it was not long ago, folks. There's a great article, put this up. And then you have Toxic Agent Orange was sprayed on British Columbia, a document show. And during the 1960s and the 70s, according to documents obtained by CTV News, a television station in Ontario, tens of thousands of gallons of toxic mixture were applied to clear brush near highways and along power lines in the late 60s, early 70s. In some cases, the substance was sprayed next to homes. I did a story, too, some years ago on the air, where they were still using it around military camps in Canada. And they had one around base board, and it was in newspapers. Because a few folk had eventually taken it to court, because they were spraying right through into the 90s with the stuff to kill off weeds around it. And the people didn't know. Around these bases, you always have towns grow up, you see. And the folk didn't know. And what this article is pretty good is that all that stuff went into the creek that it sprayed. And they saw it getting sprayed. And it says, we drank it. All that stuff got into the cow. We drank the milk. Our clothes were washing it. Our dishes were washing it. We didn't know what it was. And they'll take it for granted, if it's getting sprayed, it must be okay. Somebody is. You know, this great hierarchy of special, intelligent folk above us must be taken care of. They wouldn't do anything nasty. That's what they're there for, is to take care of you in this paternalistic, maternalistic system. Eh? Toxic gas tested on Norwich. That was the one in England I mentioned years ago. And it says, the Cold War chemical trials carried out with the Ministry of Defence. Royal Air Force planes released clouds of zinc cadmium sulfide over Norwich in 1963 and 64. Actually, it's many, many years to assess the effects of a biological attack. So they sprayed them with the stuff that's carcinogenic. So MPs and that were taken up. And it's revealed that Norwich has twice as many cases of cancer of the esophagus, the organ in the back of the throat, which tops the food tube to the stomach. Well, it is the food tube, really, as a national average. And it's the data released from the Freedom of Information Act. Not bad, they're releasing it, you know, like 40 years after the events or whatever. And they sprayed it from ships, too, when the wind was the right direction, Royal Navy ships. But it didn't stop there. They had vans with special vents on the top going driving around all the streets, and folk didn't even know they were getting sprayed in cities and towns. But they were testing everybody and watching how your health would deteriorate or whatever. They got all incredible data. That's the beauty of a national health system, though. Great data collectors. Millions were in germ war tests. Much of Britain's exposed to bacteria sprayed in secret trials. Ministry of Defence turned large parts of the country into giant laboratories to conduct series of germ warfare tests on the public. And the report just released provides for the first time a comprehensive official history of Britain's biological warfare and weapons trials between 1940 and 1979. Many of the tests involved releasing potential dangerous chemicals and microorganisms over vast swaths of population without the public being told. And another one too, the news that matters about the nuclear industry, Fukushima, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, atomic testing and radiation isotope. There's a documentary that was banned in the UK. I don't know if it's there now, but it was up on YouTube, and I found it again. And it's about the radioactive waste and barrels of it dumped and forgotten it's not really forgotten, it's just they pretend they don't know where it was, but divers are finding it, and fishermen are pulling up tanks and like 50-gallon drums and so on, and stuff, which is all leaking. A documentary shown in German and French TV, but not in England. And they'd even dumped stacks of stuff from the atomic industry, from the power stations, stacks of the stuff and isotopes in the Irish Sea. And especially in the space between that and Northern England, Ireland, Northern England, and Scotland. And also stacks of it too along the Channel Islands and the four dying off and all these different areas of different kinds of cancers, which are so... But again, this is documented stuff and it's a good documentary. As he discusses the effects of sea dumping of radioactive waste on the health of people living on the local coasts like the Irish Sea and the Baltic Sea, which is the most radioactive sea in the world. So they show the dumping in the English Channel, Herd Deep, they call it the Herd Deep area, about 12 miles north of the Channel Island of Alderney. The stuff's washing up in Alderney and the beaches, the radioactive, the water's contaminated, and so is all the seaweed and so on. Alderney is also subject to release to the sea from the French nuclear reprocessing plant at Cap de La Hague, 12 miles east of the small island. Amazing, eh? They're all doing it. And they were dropping them in the lochs in Scotland at one point. I remember that. So I mentioned that story years ago. And then again, you have the plan takedown again through austerity. Is the Deutsche Bank the next Lehman Brothers? And then another one too. Deutsche Bank may face the ECB probe over dealings in its own bonds. And I think the US Federal Reserve, again, has helped to bail them out recently over this whole scam that's going on here. You're getting, their money is going to be valueless eventually. But again, it's planned to go that way. Then out of the crisis will come a new world system. Worse than last. And you've been complete austerity then, believe me. Better hungry than eat meat, UK school goes veg only, no packed lunches or freedom of choice. Well, that's socialism run by the wealthiest folk on the planet. As I say, the upper class, the middle class, help bring it all in, manage all, and you find that it's elite that own socialism. Death taxes swell treasury coffers by 5.4 billion as they go after more and more money clawed in from the folk. They try to stop from inheriting anything from their parents or whatever when they die. Climate emergency. Ireland is set to ban private cars. Remember that the agenda for the 21st century, Agenda 21, signed by all the nations that belong to the United Nations, they all signed on to this agenda for the whole century with implementations like 2010, 2020, 2030, and so on. The different parts of it to be fulfilled and completed, and then on to the next part. But the Agenda 21 is for the entire century with all the things that they must get through. And you'll find that they have it stated quite plainly there, and I read the articles years ago on the air, that there'll be elimination of privately owned vehicles. And there'll be essential vehicles only, which are police, fire, ambulance, that type of thing, military, etc. And that's what it's about. And of course, by 2030, they're part of the 21st century plan, 2030, because they meet every so many years, they plan to have so much off the road, so they want them off the road. I told you this years ago, before they even came out, all this stuff, they do this. In fact, in 1998, I remember talking about that, they'd ban cars. And at the same time, they're planning mass third world migration. This article here, I'll put it up. And another article, privately owned cars should be banned from London by 2030. It says pro-Corbyn think tank, but it's not just at London, it's across the country. That's Agenda 21, folks. I'll put that up too. I guess all I've got time for, really. I could go on and on and on, but I prattled on something else before I started, right? Anyway, it's some food for thought. You're living through a planned system, folks. Nothing happens that hasn't been planned. And often published before it happens, often long ago. That's why you forget it. You forget all about it. Oh, that hasn't. So you forget it, and then it happens. Remember, you can help me out by buying the books and discs, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, or donating. Remember, you can donate by sending cash, or checks, or international postal money orders if you're outside Canada, and it's PayPal. So from Alan Watt, Interior Canada, it's good night to me, your God, or your God's go with you.
Ozzy Skateboard and listen to UCY.tv.